You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey, this is Kirk Barrett. You're watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all across the country. And I have an amazing guest today, one of my closest friends in all of dentistry, who you are going to love. This guy is truly what I would consider a master, Dr. Brian Schroeder. So do me a favor, hit the share button and grab a pen, settle in. You're going to love this. We'll see you in just a second.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Barrett is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Welcome back. Welcome to the Best Practices Show. I am so grateful for not only my guests, but also for you guys being here. I have an amazing master on the program today, and his name is Dr. Brian Schroeder. I'm going to give him a little bit of an intro. I've known him for almost 10 years now. We got a chance to meet each other at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, where I got to see him speak, and he is phenomenal. Not only a great speaker, but also a great human being. A lot of fun, an amazing practice. His dentistry is absolutely gorgeous. And what's even more important than that, he's got an incredible family and an unbelievable wife. So as you can see, this is one of those guys. He's very humble, but I'm going to tell you, he's got it all. This is one of the guys that really achieved all of it in dentistry, and you've lived nine lives learning what you've learned. So, Brian, thanks for being on, buddy.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for having me, Kirk. I listen to these things that you say about me, and I just wonder who you're talking about. I just get up every day and try to do the best that I can possibly do, just like everybody else does. But I'm a general dentist in San Antonio, Texas. I've been playing this game for about 35 years now, and I have evolved into a guy who does a lot of interdisciplinary type of dentistry. I started out doing what everybody else does and have found that it was a little less than satisfying, if you will, as far as that practice style. So I've evolved into a guy who has learned to use people around him really, really well. And the whole concept that you're only as good as the people that you surround yourself with is certainly evident in my practice. So thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, brother, it is all my pleasure. So a couple show notes. Now, if you're watching this, we are shooting this live on Facebook. So if you have a question, please type it inside. And I'm going to ask the master himself while we're asking the questions. So please feel free to ask questions. And Vinny's already on here. He says, love you, bud. Love you too, Vinny. So a lot of people from the Seattle Study Club Network watching this, and it's great stuff. So Brian, you know, you and I were talking about before we got started, one of my favorite titles, if not my favorite title of all time in any lecture that I've seen, is the one that you had, which is called Confessions of a Former Single Tooth Dentist. What does that mean? For people that haven't seen that, what does that mean?
It's basically the story of my evolution, as a matter of fact. I realized for the first many years of my practice life, I did dentistry the way that I was taught to do dentistry in dental school. That was essentially one procedure at a time, almost as though we kind of commoditize the profession and we sell parts of it. It became rather dissatisfying to me about 12 years in, kind of looking at things going, you know, if this is all there is in this game of dentistry, and I got to do it for another 25 years, I'm going to be challenged to maintain some sort of passion and enthusiasm about it. And I came to the realization that there was a whole lot that I needed to learn. There was a whole lot more that I needed to know. And so I kind of embarked on a journey that was a perpetual kind of constant learning journey in order to help me with the way that I practice dentistry, my satisfaction for it, the outcomes that I get, so consequently the improvements on the part of my patients, the fact that all of us make each other better when we work together as opposed to working separately is also a huge part of it. So I had the privilege of speaking to some Seattle study clubs when I met you at Scottsdale, and I was doing that program on digital impressioning. And for those of you that know me, I'm a huge fan of computers and dentistry, but that's a totally different topic. But in any event, I was going and talking for a few Seattle study clubs, and the common sort of denominator that I would get in meeting with the directors was that, you know, you get all this fabulous continuing education every single, you know, once a month or once every 6 weeks or something. But at the end of the day, on Monday morning, it seems like everybody's exactly the same. They don't necessarily do anything with that education. And on a flight home, I very distinctly remembered on a flight home from Eugene, Oregon, I realized that those directors were talking about me. I mean, I was talking about one little facet of this whole concept of dentistry, this whole profession of dentistry. And I realized they were talking about me. And then I also came to the realization that it was this recent foray into interdisciplinary sort of learning with the Seattle Study Club. So I was on the plane thinking, what can I do? What sort of program can I develop that will help people understand that there is tremendous satisfaction and constant growth and change. And I came up with the topic, Confessions of a Single Tooth Dentist, because the reality was I was very much a full-time single tooth dentist at the time, and it wasn't really doing it for me. And so I felt like I could speak and present and help perhaps others know my journey. And I wonder why people have this fascination with it and this interest in it. But I guess it's because it rings true to everyone. It's kind of follows their life as well. So that's kind of how I got into it.
I want you to expand on that too, because you and I have had these conversations. You know, one of the things that we find in coaching practices all over the country is just, you know, people don't have to have perfect, but they do have to have progress. And throughout the course of your career, when you talked about the first couple of phases of your career, one of the things that we all need as humans is, hey, look, this next year has just got to be better than this last year. And over time, an accumulation where you can say, yeah, every year's been better. Like my dentistry gets better. My communication gets better. You look back at a career and you go, this has been fun. When it stays the same, that's when you kind of go crazy. And I want you to talk about this too, because a lot of the young dentists we coach, they think a great restorative practice is doing full mouth cases all the time, every day. And I want you to tell them the truth about a great restorative dentist, because you're not doing full mouth cases all the time. There are days where you're just doing simple stuff. Then there's days that you're doing complex stuff. How does it work for you?
The reality is that I tell people all the time, especially younger dentists that come and hear me, and it's like they want to be able to purchase what I have. Mm-hmm. And the reality is you can't buy it. You can only buy it with time and persistence and determination in order to improve each day. The whole concept of mastery is about accepting gradual improvement over time. And as George Leonard says, loving the plateau, because despite the fact that you're going to be working hard each day to be better each day, you're not necessarily going to see results every single day. You have to get comfortable with the plateau, knowing that as you continue to work and as you continue to drive and continue to learn, that there's going to be little bumps along the way that up you to the next level. Okay. So that's one of the things that I wanted to say. With respect to this whole concept that everybody believes that I do nothing but full mouth rehabilitations all day long, that's absolutely not the case. In fact, I don't know that I could handle doing full mouth rehabilitations all day long. That's very hard dentistry. And sometimes people have this image or this aspiration that that's nirvana in this game of dentistry. Certainly, I'm privileged to be able to do a lot of complex dentistry. Over time, I have developed the skill set. I've developed the interdisciplinary team to help me with it. And I've just gradually gotten the rep of being able to do that. The bulk of my day is no different than anybody else's. And for many, many reasons, it's just simply because you look at the broad scope of patients that you see and you treat their needs, you treat their desires, and their needs aren't always complex dentistry. Their needs can be simple dentistry. And so there's no more truth stated than the fact that I do some complex dentistry, but the bulk of what I do is no different than anybody else. I tell people all the time, Kirk, we all started at the same point. We all graduated from dental school, right? And at that point, we were all essentially the same. And then it becomes the decisions that you make going forward that help you improve and determine who you happen to be. So,
yeah. Now, the book you referenced earlier, for those of you that have not read this book, and I love the fact that you're reading this book and because it really, it's the journey that you're on. It's called Mastery by George Leonard. It is an absolute must read. Nobody ever achieves perfection. It's all about the process. It's about the process. And he gives great clarity to, and you talk about the plateau and kind of frame this up because I look at you as a master, but what would you say to a young dentist getting started that really, you know how this is when you got started, you want it all now, but you realize you don't know what you don't know. You have to have a little bit of failure because it's the fuel or the fertilizer for the growth piece. So what would you say to a young dentist who wants it all right now and wants everything to be perfect?
Be patient, be disciplined with it, resist the temptation to grab the immediate gratification sort of thing and look at it as just what you said. It's the destination, it's not the journey. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of people that have discussed that whole concept of happiness, one of which is John Wooden, and he says that it's essentially the ability to continue to be the best that you can each day, and it's ultimately the journey, it's not the destination. So for young dentists in the community, I would say one of the most important things is to be patient and to continue to try to do the best that you can possibly do and move through your journey that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we talked about this before we went on the air, you know, your journey with insurance, you talked about presentation skills. What are some of the keys that were important in your career, let's say through the first phase or the second phase that you woke up and you're like, hey, I got to get good at this. And you mentioned presentation skills and the ability to communicate with patients. Talk to us about that. What does that mean?
So basically what that means is this. I mean, if you look at all of the people that you admire and respect and the people that you even have on this telecast, on this show, one of the things that you're attracted to and one of the reasons that you have them on the show is because they have outstanding communication skills.
Right.
So when people ask me, when young dentists especially ask me, where should I work on? What should I do? How should I grow? I tell them, go to Toastmaster and learn presentation skills, because the patients that you treat, ultimately, yes, they know that you're a good clinical dentist. But the reality is you never get to do that clinical dentistry unless you can communicate and endear yourselves to those patients well enough to have them trust you. So I think the whole concept of communication skills is huge. It's hugely important in your ability to kind of progress through it. Along with the presentation skills verbally comes the presentation that you have with respect to your office. What does it look like? Walk in the front door someday and see what it's like and see what the patient sees. What does your team look like? What does your equipment look like? I mean, what is your whole physical facility like? Because all of that is your presentation to the patient to enable them to make decisions about treatment. So yeah, presentation skills, I think, of paramount importance in your success in the game. Insurance, wow. First of all, let me just fess up. I deal with insurance every single day of my practice life. There's not a day that goes by that a patient doesn't say to me, hey doctor, what does my insurance company pay for? So one of the things that we have to have is the ability to, number one, establish relationships with patients that make them want to go beyond just the basic commoditization of the game. And you have to have the ability and your quote presentation skills to endear them to you, to have them trust you so that you can begin the dialogue of something other than, hey, doctor, what does my insurance company cover? And that all basically begins with the very first time that the patient sits down with you. The very first conversation that you have with them, you set the stage. You enable them to get to know you while you're getting to know them, and it helps. But the reality is all of us deal with insurance. All of us do. But you want to put yourself in a position where there are people in the world that don't necessarily subscribe to all I want is what my insurance company pays. And there are more of them out there than you realize. And you need to give them the opportunity to make the choice of something different.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's really important what you said, because I'm going to ask you for a little bit of specifics on this. I've watched you do this. Your entire, what you're all about, your core values is people will ask you that question, but every part of your presentation or process is all about hey, I am here for you. The relationship comes first. We'll cross that bridge together. And I know you have insurance. You're an insurance-friendly doctor, but you're more on the emphasis upfront of building that equity and use the word trust, which is such an important word. And that's a hard thing for a lot of younger practitioners to gather early on.
When I said be patient, I think sometimes we have this mindset, especially younger practitioners have this mindset that we need to jump in and start doing something right away because that's what creates production and that's what creates numbers for our practice. A first appointment for me after a patient schedules, the very first thing that happens is they sit down with me for about 15 or 20 minutes. Sometimes my team gets a little bit upset with me because I like to talk. But what I do is I sit with them and I ask them why they're there. What is it that brought you here? Tell me a little bit about you. I listened to Bob Salvin talk recently, and Bob says, you know, you need to spend about 5% of the time talking about you and 95% of the time listening to what the patient says to you. And so if I give them the floor and I say, why did you end up here? What is it that I can do to help you? It basically opens that door. And so you find a place to establish rapport with people. And some of you may believe that that's essentially a, quote, waste of time. I mean, I've got this non-productive time on my schedule that I feel like I'm wasting. But the reality is it's totally different than that. Yeah. You kind of diffuse some of the anxiety that patients have when they come in. And you have the ability to kind of figure out where they happen to fit in your practice and what their desires happen to be. So I can give you specific examples as recently as last week when a patient came in and said, I'm not interested in anything cosmetic. Now, don't try to sell me. Because she had been to places where the emphasis had been immediately selling her something. And I said, hey, you know, it's not about me. It's about you. And so we go through a couple of appointments and then she pulled me aside and she said, you know, I just want to tell you something when we had this conversation. I said, what's that? And she said, well, when I first came in, I told you that I wasn't really interested in cosmetic stuff, but now that I'm looking at these photographs of me and I kind of know this place a little bit better, would you tell me what possibilities there are? And so just being patient on the front side reaps rewards on the backside. So
that is awesome. I love that. When patients call your office and schedule an appointment, most of them are highly referred. We talked about this. They always see you. This is a common question. Do they see hygiene first or they see you first? And everybody has a different vision or philosophy. Tell us yours.
Yeah, mine is me because I feel like the reason that they're at the office is because of me. One of the biggest places we get referrals now is online reviews, Google reviews. I mean, you can look at my practice website and we have something like 64 or 65 five-star Google reviews. And there's things on there that people have said about me that I would never say about myself. Okay. But if I figure that they're there because all these people have said great things about Schroeder, then they're going to see Schroeder the very first time they come in. And diverting it to a different way, I realize that there's fabulous practices in the industry that they don't even see the dentist, but for a very brief period of time, the first time, but not me. I have the patient sit down with me to discover why they happen to be there. And I want them to know right away who the person is that's responsible for everything else that's going on around them and take accountability for what's happening with them. So I sit with them, as I just told you, and ask them their story. And at the end of their story, when we finally break up and we go back to a clinical room to begin the process of a diagnostic exam, I sit there and take photographs of them before they even get out of the chair. I ask them if I can take some pictures. So we start with the photography right there in the consultation room and then move into the back and do the intraoral photography and go through a comprehensive examination.
I love that.
One of the things that I learned that I was doing as a single tooth dentist was that I was focusing too much on the clinical examination and not doing a comprehensive examination. So when I go and I speak about this concept of confessions of a former single tooth dentist, when I first got started in the game, I thought I had to look at teeth and I had to make a diagnosis of teeth and I had to put something on the schedule that was related to restorative dentistry so that I could make enough money at the end of the month that I could pay all of my bills and have some left for me. And that's a great concept. But the fact of the matter is a comprehensive examination. If you sit and do a comprehensive examination, what is probably one of the biggest benefits of doing that? What comes from a comprehensive examination for every single patient that you see? And the answer to the question is a lot of single tooth dentistry. Single tooth dentistry that doesn't necessarily happen in a 1 minute look at the hygiene visit. It's right there where you can talk with a patient. And so not every comprehensive examination results in comprehensive treatment. And perhaps I haven't evolved enough to say, this is where I want to spend a lot more time. And these people, yeah, they don't really need that much. But the fact of the matter is a comprehensive examination happens for everybody in my practice. I don't simply do it on occasional people or people that call in and say certain things.
Absolutely. Well, and that's an important piece because I just want to drill home on what you've said. You know, one of the things that you said is getting to learn people's story up front, because your ability as a dentist to learn people's story, you're going to learn so many more things than you could possibly ask them when you really understand their story. And then your ability to communicate is going to determine how far you go as a restorative dentist. And you're doing all of that equity and trust building up front. So when it comes to clinical dentistry, that becomes an easier process.
Absolutely correct. You're establishing the relationship and the trust up front, but that's an ongoing sort of thing. It's not a, I do it all at the front and then it's all forgotten. I mean, it's a philosophy. It's a core value of everybody in the practice that we are going to do the best that we can do to try to take care of them the way that we would want to be taken care of ourselves. So you live it the way that you want it to be lived in your own self.
That's awesome. So as far as turning the corner, when you turned the corner from that epiphany you had early in your career, what were some of the key moments for you where you're like, okay, here's something I have to do different. Here's something I had to stop doing. And here's something I had to start doing.
Well, first of all, I think what we need to know is this whole concept of single tooth dentistry. One of the reasons that most of us are single tooth dentists is because we learned it that way in dental school. Mm-hmm. And you think about your dental school experience, and your dental school experience was essentially, at mine for sure, was operative dentistry taught me operative dentistry and removal prosthodontics taught me removal. And they compartmentalized all of the disciplines. And it's out of necessity. I mean, you can't possibly teach somebody in the minimum numbers of years that you have as a clinical sort of student to be able to grasp the whole picture. But when you come out of school, you have these ideas that the way to do this game is to look for certain little procedures. So the epiphany that I really had was whenever I was invited to become a part of a study club. It was an implant study club. And I realized that, you know, I wasn't necessarily, let's put it this way, as a general practice resident trained dentist, I thought that I could do everything. I learned periodontics from a periodontist. I learned oral surgery from an oral surgeon. I learned prosthodontics from a prosthodontist. And so I had all this knowledge that I gained from all different disciplines of dentistry. And when I came into my practice, I thought, you know what? I don't need any of those other people. I can do all this stuff by myself. And the reality was I failed miserably at it because you can't possibly know and do everything. And you don't really know your shortcomings as long as you're sitting in your own little box. You believe that you're doing everything great when in fact there's a whole big world out there. So when I got into this study club, I realized that there was a whole lot more for me to be able to do in incorporating others into my practice. So the epiphany truly was being involved in a study club. So anybody that's out there that's listening, that's young or that isn't young, anybody that's in the profession who finds themselves isolated in their own little world of dentistry and not getting out and learning from other people, that's probably the number one way or number one reason that I came to the discovery that I needed to do things a little bit differently. And then once that happened, within that study club concept, you've heard the phrase that whenever you want the education, the teacher suddenly appears.
Yeah.
You don't really know what you don't know until you kind of go, hey, wait a minute. And you start looking around. And so there's mentors all over the place for us. There's people in this game of dentistry that are phenomenal practitioners that have been uber successful at different parts of it. And if we're on this advice mode in this whole presentation, advice would be find somebody that you really respect, find somebody that you have admiration for, and ask them to help you. Ask them to allow you to shadow them. Because I can tell you, there's not one practitioner that's not established and capable and confident and successful that doesn't want you to be successful. And if you ask them, it kind of raises the ego flag and it raises the flattery flag. And you're like, heck yeah, man, come on, hang out with us and let's see what's going on, see how I can help you. But you have the responsibility of accepting that graciously and learning from them and actually doing something with it. Don't go home and be the same person that you were before. So that's the epiphany, was the whole collaborative sort of thing that happened in my world.
Yeah. So we always talk about this, you know, you become the average of the five people you hang around with the most. And it's everybody kind of gets that concept. But what's more important than that is the study club is actually a system. It's a scheduled appointment that you got to show up, because left to your own devices, you just don't do it as well as when you're accountable to other people. They're going to expect you to show up. You're going to be expected to learn. You're going to be expected to contribute. And all of that is incredibly important when you have it in your schedule. Because if I want to read anything, do anything, if I just leave it to my own devices, I'm not going to get there. One of the questions I always like to ask people is, do you really want to get better? Do you want to become a master, or do you want to become the best that you can be? And everyone says, well, of course I do. And then the second question is, what do you do that supports that? And I learned that question from Rachel Wall. That was awesome. She's like, ask somebody the question of what they believe. And then follow it up with, what do you do that supports that? And say, hey, look, I'm in one of the best study clubs ever, Seattle Study Club or an implant study, where I'm just constantly surrounded by great people. And they're challenging me to be better all the time. So critically important.
Yeah. So one of the things, I'm going to interrupt you because there's a lot of thoughts going through my head whenever you're talking about that. But one of the things that you're really discussing is a person's willingness to change and be different. And it's so incredible to me. And it happens to me. And if I don't watch for it, then I know that it's going to continue to happen. And that is a reluctance to be different and a reluctance to change. Mm-hmm. It seems as though all of us get comfortable where we happen to be. We get really, really comfortable with where we are. And we have this unwillingness to allow the disruption of change to enter our lives because, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to do something different. And maybe that's what was happening with me early on. And I came to the realization that change is a good thing, despite the fact that it's disruptive. You mentioned something earlier that I think is very profoundly important, and that happens to be the willingness to fail. I mean, if you read Maxwell's stuff, you can read the Failing Forward book that was probably the first introduction to me into the concept that I had to make mistakes in order to learn from those mistakes. You don't necessarily learn from what you do well. You just do those things over and over again. So the courage to be different was one of the things that I continue to have to force myself to do. In fact, I'll share something with you. You gave me this great intro that I'm this phenomenal dentist and I'm all of these things, which I'm humbled by, I'm flattered by, but I'm probably really not a lot of those things. But I will tell you this, one of the things that I made a commitment to do this year is I'm going to be 60 years old in a couple of weeks. Okay. And so the realization came to me that, dude, you may have like 5 to 10 years of really good, solid hard work to go in this game. And even at 60 years old, I've made the commitment that I'm not going to be the same dentist for the next 7 or 8 years that I've been for the last 7 or 8 years. I'm going to commit myself to be different, commit myself to be better, and commit myself to grow. So at any point in your life, in your practice life, in your personal life, you can choose to be better. And so what you were discussing earlier is the simple fact that we're so unwilling to change and so unwilling to be different because we're so comfortable where we are and we don't want the disruption. Try to push that aside and do something different. We'll call it analysis paralysis, right? I mean, how many times you've labored and struggled over this decision to do something different or be something different, and you don't do it and you don't do it. And finally, one day you decide, yep, I'm in. And then what happens invariably? What happens invariably is that you think to yourself, why didn't I do this sooner? That's true in my life. And that's why I just said I made the commitment that for the next few years, this old dog is going to get better.
Yeah. You are not an old dog. You're a young dog. And here's the thing I would say. You said two things I absolutely love. Is sometimes when you're on this journey, we've learned it's not so much getting the new information in, it's getting the old thoughts out, you know, just pushing those things out. And that's a challenge because that's just part of the whole process moving forward. And then even at your stage of maturity in the game, everybody, no matter who it is, I don't care if you're 70 or if you're 80 or if you're 90, one of the things, this is ancient wisdom, is there's three keys to being happy. Number one, have something to do that gives you purpose. Number two, have somebody to share it with. And number three, have something to look forward to. And that's exactly what you're doing at this stage of the game. You've got to have an exciting future. Your best years always have to be in front of you. We get to see dentists from all over the world. And I'll tell you, hands down, the happiest dentists we ever see have those three things. They're doing something they care about. They have somebody in their lives they're sharing it with. And number three, they always say, hey, look, I got a whole new chapter of the game in front of me and it's exciting. The ones that say, oh, the years of great dentistry are over or I used to have fun. You can see they're not that much fun to be around and it's really affected their self-esteem, confidence and everything. So I think what you're going to be doing for the next 7 years, I can't wait to see what you're up to. So very cool.
Well, along those lines, this whole study club thing that was people that I could share it with and I could kind of toss ideas off of. Yeah, definitely led to happiness. I mean, I told you I was about 12 or 15 years in going, this ain't so cool. And I realized that I wasn't making myself as good as I could possibly be. The whole concept of improving yourself each day is a big part of that. And so the happiness journey is, I struggle with that some, but the reality is that I'm in a good place in the profession right now. Oh, I know what I wanted to tell you was this whole concept of insurance and that sort of thing. And the profession, like the golden days of dentistry are gone. You know, for generations, I guess we've heard that the golden age of whatever is gone. And I think that the whole thing that we need to do is look at the profession as it is and how can I be as impactful and as good as I can be going forward? You don't necessarily want to practice like we used to practice. You want to practice in a way that is consistent with the times. And look, man, I'm sitting here on a podcast, sitting in a room by myself, talking to a computer. You learn to be different. You learn to adapt and you learn to change. And so this game of dentistry, why would I need a website? That was my mindset 10 years ago. But I got a website for whatever reason. And I just wondered why I had it. Until now, I look at my statistics and I would tell you that we probably have 60 to 70% of our new patient referrals come from online reviews. So practice dentistry in a way that's consistent with the times. It's not like you want to stay what we happen to be. And certainly there's changes that are in the profession right now that we're going to have to deal with and adapt to. But the power of adaptability and change and stuff rears its head again. You know, you just got to be something different.
Absolutely. And on the concept of insurance, just go a little bit further than that, because we do have a lot of dentists that come to this, they're watching this right now. They're like, man, my whole practice is insurance. I signed up for everything under the sun. And now I'm starting to do the math because the insurance is changing the game. Man, I'm going to have to work harder. What's the first step in getting not necessarily off of insurance completely? Where would you start? What would you tell a young dentist who's heavily involved to become less involved? Where would you start?
Okay, so I'm not going to answer that question specifically right up front, but I will remind me of what it was because I'm going to get off on a little bit of a tangent here. My feelings about insurance are these. Number one, I don't believe there's any such thing as dental insurance. All right. I think that what we or our patients bring to us is a coupon that they can spend pretty much anywhere they want to spend it. And once it's spent, it's gone. And so that's not necessarily insurance. That's just, it's different than that. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to say about insurance is this. Insurance, for all intents and purposes, it leads to a hopeless sort of practice style. And before you get upset with me, hear what I'm talking about. I believe that we work hard to be exceptional with our skills, with our knowledge, with our communication set, with our abilities to give patients what's the best that they can possibly get. And then when we sign on with an insurance company, that insurance company tells us what we can do. And so it becomes this point of, it doesn't really matter how much I learn. It doesn't really matter how much I know. It doesn't really matter what I can do. The insurance company says I can only do this. So you become defeated. And as I said, it's this hopeless sort of style. It's just not something that I was in any way satisfied with. I'm fortunate that I've never been an insurance provider. I've dealt with insurance my entire career. And so let me get to your question. Your question was, what would I say to a young practitioner who's in all of these insurances? Well, I would say that you need to stop looking at every single patient that comes in your practice from the insurance mindset. The insurance mindset is a non-patient retention sort of phenomenon. Once I get my $1,000 or $1,500 out of them, they don't really serve any purpose to me anymore, and I need to move on to the next one. So you tend to need really high volume of new patients, and it becomes kind of exhausting. So what I would say is take some time to be what I said earlier, be patient. Just back away from that whole, I've got to do a whole bunch of things right now, and sit with the patient and talk with them and develop those relationships and develop the presentation skill set that sets you apart from just the guy who's interested in the $1,500. And when that opportunity presents itself, and it will, have the courage and the willingness to take advantage of it. You know what I mean? So don't just become this defeated sort of individual who says, well, I'm signed up with all these insurance plans and it's all that's ever going to happen to me and it's all that I can ever do. And no one of my patients want anything more than insurance-based dentistry. I don't think that's necessarily true of a lot of our practices if we honestly look at them. So I would say, to answer your question, give the patient some time to ultimately say to you, well, that's not necessarily how I want to be treated. In my program, Confessions of a Former Single Tooth Dentist, when we're talking about insurance, into that whole discussion is, do your patients believe that you're providing them comprehensive care? And with an insurance mindset, you cannot really truly provide comprehensive care to people. So if your patient expects it, then you have the responsibility to deliver it, at least a comprehensive examination. So kind of stay away from this whole commoditized drive through the window and say, I want one of these and two of those and three of those, and my total is going to be this, and pay on your way out. It's super teeth instead of super cuts.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to just piggyback on that too, because you use the word mindset, and really that's the key piece here is just creating the right mindset yourself and then having it work its way through your entire team. I think this, number one, you have to believe money spent in your office is some of the best money people could ever invest in this, staying healthy for a long time. That's where you have to start. If you think people just want cheap, fast, and easy, then your whole business is going to be set up that way. It's a function of what you believe. So that's where we have to start. And everybody's got to believe that. Your team members, if your team members think you are crazy expensive and nobody wants to pay for dentistry, that's killing the whole practice right up front. And the mindset lends itself to other things like this. And Brian, you talked about this, is there are a lot of practices we go out to see, and when we're coaching, they're like, we have so much insurance. I got to get away from insurance. And then you listen to the woman answering the phone and she says, do you have insurance? What kind of insurance do you have? Can you bring your insurance card? Do you have your insurance card on you? She'll use the word insurance 6 to 8 times. And I'm thinking, if I don't have insurance, I better get some insurance before I come to this office. And so they're already thinking that. Now, I want to make this clear. We are not sitting here damning insurance companies, because I've been doing this for more than 2 decades and you have too. We went to seminar after seminar and people would just damn the insurance companies. And that is really a very dangerous cliff or a slippery slope to get on, because then you just start resenting everything. People have insurance, they're conditioned, they don't know what to ask. And it is what it is. And I like the word insurance friendly. We're an insurance friendly office. Now, that doesn't mean we accept it as full payment, but yeah, come on in. And there, you know, it is the coupon. I love that.
Your points are well taken, that if your team doesn't support your value system, it's an uphill climb that you probably won't ever get over. So they have to believe that their purpose is of value and that what you do as a practitioner has value. So the team that surrounds you is key. As far as the whole discussion of insurance, we've become a very, very insurance-dependent society. The question is, the place that we find challenging is getting people to understand that medical insurance is truly insurance and dental insurance is truly not. And so the difficulty becomes in the concept of education, which can be very difficult. And some people never get over that. And one of the things that I've had to learn is that I have to decide who I want to be. And for the longest part of my profession, the longest part of my practice early on was found in, I needed to satisfy every single person that came into my practice. If they didn't want what I had to offer, then I was a failure. But the fact of the matter is, and some of my mentors have helped me with this, you have to decide what it is that you want to do and how that you want to do it. And you set out to make sure that you make the patients that you see happy within those parameters, as opposed to trying to take on all comers and to try to do everything.
Absolutely. I wrote that down. Decide who you want to be. And that is a critical piece of your career as an entrepreneur, as a dentist. Because when you decide who you want to be, and when we coach young dentists, that's the first item is decide. Do you want to be a dad? Do you want to be a mom? Do you want to have a great practice? Do you want to Once you decide, because here's the cool part, you can write the narrative. You write the narrative, you write the script for what happens for the next 30 years. And some of you people that are listening,
you don't have to decide to be one thing, okay?
Right.
You can either be a dad, or you can be a mom, or you can be a dentist. The reality is that we can be all of those things, and we can do them extremely well. It's just a function of balance. And so it's a privilege for me to be able to cut off your comments there, you know.
Dude, you and I can talk for hours and hours and hours on this stuff that we're passionate about, because really what's really fun about this is you and I have core values that are just tightly wound. So anything we talk about, whether it be family, dentistry, how to take care of people, the true gift of dentistry and its profession. And on January 11th of this year, the number one profession in the United States, you know what it was, right?
being a dentist.
Being a dentist, yeah. Number one profession. Absolutely, buddy. This is awesome. And you and I are going to do a bunch of these. We've got a ton of topics that I want to cover with you, and we're going to jump all over. But here's what I want to finish with a couple things. Number one, what would be your best pieces of advice of somebody getting started in their career? Let's say I'm just getting started. Let's say I'm in dental school and I'm watching this. Or let's say I'm an associate at a big practice and I'm just kind of struggling. What would be your advice to a young dentist?
Well, you're putting some pressure on me, Kirk.
Sorry.
No, I accept it. I think that probably the number one piece of advice that I would give is to have a young practitioner seek out people within the profession, within their immediate profession that they respect. And joining groups would be the opportunity to see these practitioners as they do what they do, and then hang out with them and find out just exactly what they do, how they do it, the mistakes that they've made, and learn along the way. So I would say probably the number one piece of advice that I would give to a young practitioner is to make sure that you seek out information from people that have established themselves in the community and have the ability to look objectively at where you happen to be. If you happen to be in a practice that's a high volume place that doesn't necessarily jive with what your desires are, then maybe begin to look beyond and look for places where you can practice differently than that. And I recognize the fact that it's not an easy thing to do, but there are practices out there that would welcome you in, at least from the learning standpoint. So I think that would probably be maybe the number one bit of advice, is that there are some great practices out there that have a heck of a lot to teach you, and look for them and be willing to go up to them and say, hey, will you kind of mentor me in this game? So look for a teacher. Look for a teacher to help you.
Absolutely. Finding a teacher is key. So speaking on that, now you do a lot of speaking. If you're looking for a great speaker for your study club, this is one of the guys you have to get. How can people find you? I want your practice website, and then how can I find you personally?
Okay, so my practice website is BrianKSchroederDDS.com. Spell the last name S-C-H-R-O-D-E-R. There's no E after the O. My email address is BKSDDS@gmail.com. And if you want to call my office, it's 210-496-9967. I probably have a Facebook page, but that's one of the places where I'm upgrading my whole game this year. So that's the place that you can find me. There's some new topics that I've got that I'm developing. One is mastering the art of general dentistry. I came to the realization that maybe I had something to offer, especially for general dentists and their desire to be more interdisciplinary. And so it's a clinical, non-clinical sort of thing of how I do stuff. And so, yeah, I'd be more than welcome to come and speak to any of the groups.
Cool, brother. Well, I really appreciate you being on. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Are we done already? I just kind of, time flies
It flies when you're having fun. And you and I are going to do many of these on a bunch of different topics. So when I end with one thought, it's this: you get one shot at this life, but you know what? If you do it right, it's pretty much all you need. And in dentistry, you have the ability to create what Brian said, great life, great family, great everything, but you got to be really intentional. You got to find the right teacher. So that's my hope for you. So thank you for watching today. And like I said, if you have any comments or any questions for Brian, you can enter them in the feed. I'm going to ask Brian to respond to some of those questions. So please put those in there and hit the share button. Until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.